several weeks called Resolved. And the idea is it's sort of tied to the new year, and it's a series focusing on spiritual disciplines. The idea that some of you have made New Year's resolutions and you're still going, which is awesome, or you've just made changes in your life that happen to be around the new year. But the idea is just that when we are firm in our purpose and commitment to do something and follow through with it, it changes us. And so as we look at spiritual disciplines, these are activities and behaviors and things that we can do to deepen our walk with Jesus, to make us more like him, to know his word. You want to know his word more, or you feel like you don't, you know as much as you wish you knew, spend time reading the Bible. And so we've looked at different things over the last few weeks in different areas. We talked about the discipline of giving. We talked about just setting our eyes and moving straight ahead and not looking back, but moving into what God has created for us to do. And so this morning, we want to look at another one of these disciplines that that is different. It's interesting. Last week, we talked about prayer. And then this week, I want to ask you a question as we start. Have you ever had someone come up to you? Maybe it's a season of life where you're especially busy. You've got a lot going on. You just feel a little bit overwhelmed. You're starting to maybe teeter on the brink of burnout. You feel like you've got so much on your plate, you can't handle one thing. And someone walks up to you with some authority to do this and says, I need you to just stop what you're doing. Let's take things off your plate. I need you to go home and just take a day, a personal day. Just set it aside. I don't want you to do any work. I don't want you to think about work. I don't want you to take any calls. I don't want you to answer any emails. I don't want you to finish that spreadsheet. I don't want you to cut that lawn. I don't want you to do anything that you think you need to do right now. I want you to take the rest of this day as a personal day. Do not work today. Have you ever had that happen? No, it's kind of odd, rare. You know, most bosses would say, you're busy, well, let me give you one more thing, and let's see how much you can handle before you crack. It's interesting, in Chinese lettering, the symbols they use to describe busyness is the symbol for heart, and then the symbol for killing. Isn't that interesting? Insightful. Busyness is heart-killing. The more busy we get, the more we neglect the deeper areas, the deeper issues of our souls. The last 2 Mondays in a row, my wife, 2 Mondays ago was my birthday, January 13th. I turned 38 years old. And I awakened at 11 a.m., which was really nice and rare and gorgeously awesome and fabulous. For those of you who like to sleep and you have little kids, opened my eyes. And what happened was my daughters both came, I think it was a snow day or something because Lily was home. They both came jumping in on me in my bed at 11 o'clock and said happy birthday. And Ange had a breakfast in bed and turned on Major League Baseball, some sort of, you know, baseball show on the TV in there. I could watch that while I ate my breakfast. And then she had all this other pampered stuff planned for me the rest of the day. And that was amazing. But that was my birthday. Hilda, I know it's your birthday. 79 today? Fantastic, fantastic. But then last Monday was not my birthday. It was January 20th. And January 20th is kind of an infamous day because I think, isn't January 20th technically the shortest day of the year or one of them? It's a very short, short day. So it's kind of a day that a lot of people who battle depression really battle it more. But last Monday, I opened my eyes and it was 11:07 again. And there was breakfast in bed again. And the girls were hopping in to say hi again. I'm like, this is amazing. Is this Groundhog Day? Like, am I reliving the same day again? I should start learning the piano very quickly. You've seen that movie. Maybe ice sculpting. But no, it wasn't the same day again. It was another Monday. It was this amazing, another like, welcome to your day, husband and dad. So no pressure, but tomorrow is Monday. Once is an, it's your turn. We'll have to find you a day. Well, I'll find you a day. Saturday. Saturday maybe? Well, or tomorrow. It could be tomorrow. Yeah, we could do that. I just know that there's something about having that start to the day and just feeling refreshed and not thinking about all the busyness and all the things going on just did something great for my soul. Isn't it amazing that we serve a God who actually commanded his people to not work one day a week. You've never had a boss who's told you, go home right now, not because you're sick and you're going to get them all sick. We've all had that a moment too. You're sick? Get out of here. Leave us alone. That's still a selfish motive. I'm saying someone who saw into the depth of your heart and said, you need to take a day to just go and do whatever you want, but just don't work. We have a God who did that. We're going to look today at the spiritual discipline of rest. Rest. So, if you want to turn with me in your Bibles to Genesis chapter 2. Genesis chapter 2, verse 1. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the seventh day, God finished his work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work that he had done. So God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it, God rested from all his work that he had done in creation. Let me ask you a quick theological question. Does God ever get tired? Does God sleep at night? Did the activities of creation somehow necessitate a long nap for him? No, God did not need to rest, right? We know that. We know he's all-powerful, he's all-knowing, he's all-everything. He does not need to rest. So therefore, if God rested, do you think there's something significant in that for us to pay attention to? Do you think maybe he rested to set an example for us to follow? Another interesting thing is that that happened before sin entered the equation. God was setting the example of rest before man sinned. You know, because we know that part of the curse, part of the fall in Genesis 3 was that when man sinned, then the ground was cursed with thorns and thistles, and it was going to be through sweat of your brow that you'll work the earth, and for women they'll have pain in childbirth, and all the results of the curse. But yet the Sabbath, the rest that God intended for his people after 6 days of work, God did that before sin entered. So this was not something that was put in place because of sin and because we'd be working harder. This was something that God instituted when the earth was still in a state of perfection. Isn't that interesting to think about? That God had set it apart and made it holy. Holiness is simply being set apart. So it was set apart as holy the seventh day before man chose to rebel against God. There's something in that for us to consider as well. So there is the example. If you flip over to Exodus chapter 20, now as God communicates with his people through Moses, he talks to Moses, and Moses is writing down these 10 commandments and delivering them to the people. Have you ever just noticed? Now, I know for many of us, we've heard the 10 commandments our entire lives, so maybe we don't question them or think too deeply about them. But think about what's on this list. No idols. No taking the Lord's name in vain, no stealing, no murder, no coveting, no adultery, no false witness, no disobedience to your parents, honoring your parents. And then in the smack dab middle of that list, it says, verses 8 through 11, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work. You or your son or your daughter, your male servant, your female servant, or your livestock, or the sojourner who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. That's a commandment listed right next to don't kill anyone. Don't commit adultery. And then it says, do not work one day a week. Set it apart to God. There's something in that. There's something that God intended for us to experience. There's something in that. Not only is he commanding it of us, not only was it instituted by God and practiced by God before sin entered the equation, then after sin enters the equation, as he tells his chosen people how to honor him through the Ten Commandments and the rest of the law, Sabbath is held apart. There's something about that one day that is significant to God and is significant to us. It's symbolic. There's a deeper meaning. It's intentional. If you think about your week, we've got 168 hours in a given week. You think about how many hours you work. Now, those of you who have full-time salary jobs, you know that 40 hours is sort of makes you smile because that's not real. That's not real at all. By the time, even if it is a clock in, clock out, 40 hours on the nose, or else you get overtime, you know it's not really 40 because your drive to get there, your preparation getting ready, your trip home, all the stuff that's involved in it, other certifications and trainings you need. Our jobs take a big part of our lives, whether your job is working outside the home or within the home. And you look at how your week starts to break down, you look at, you know, you're working, many people with full-time jobs work 50, 60 hours a week. If you have classes, it's on top of that. If you have a second job or a third job, it's on top of that. And sleep at night, 6.5 to 7 hours is sort of the national average of sleep. And they've done studies, the difference between getting 6.5 hours of sleep at night and 7.5 is astounding scientifically. That you have so much more, when you get more REM sleep, your body is actually able to process the emotional events of the day and properly categorize them and put them in its right spot. If you're awakened during that part of your sleep and you don't get enough, then sometimes you wake up feeling stressed, anxious, worrisome. Have you ever been awakened in the middle of a crazy dream and you think it's real? Yeah, that's crazy. Now, some of us have sleep dysfunctions, like me, or... You know, I'm a sleepwalker, I'm a sleep talker, I'm a sleep snorer, sleep drooler, pretty much anything there is dysfunctionally, sleep-wise, I have it in spades. Yeah, my parents have caught me walking out the front door when I was a kid. I went downstairs at a friend's house, ate a bowl of cereal in my sleep, came up. There was actually a case, a real case, of a man who had such severe sleep disorder that he actually got up in the middle of the night, got in his car, drove 14 miles, murdered his in-laws, and then woke up as he was leaving the place covered in blood, didn't know what had happened. He was actually acquitted because his sleep doctor said he's got such an extreme sleep disorder, he did not know what he was doing. This message got really dark. You're like, I thought this was good. A lot of things can happen, you know, sleep disorder. But you think about that, at night we need to sleep, we need to rest. But if you think about it, what does sleep really symbolize? What are we doing when we sleep? How vulnerable are we when we sleep? You're like, a lot more vulnerable tonight, apparently, when I go to bed. You think about, what are you saying when you close your eyes and go to sleep? You're trusting your surroundings. You're trusting the person laying next to you. You're trusting that your roof is not going to cave in on you. I mean, there's a humility that comes with sleeping. That's why after you've seen a scary movie or something, it's hard to go to sleep. So maybe you read Psalm 23 with your light on for a while and hopefully doze off. But we were made to rest. We were made to sleep. We need that. So if you look at 50, 60 hours a week, work 50 hours or so sleep, and you start to add up, the average American, now please don't rank yourself in this, well, you can rank in your mind, but not publicly. The average American watches 34 hours a week of television. Can you believe that? That's the number now, 34. That's almost a full-time job. Almost. So some that don't watch any are making up for those who watch, or, you know, there's that whole balance of statistics and things like that. So 34 hours a week are spent watching television, 50 sleeping, 50 or so working. That's 134. We only have 34 hours or so left in a week. And you divide that by 7, you got about 5 hours a day for family, for meals, for hobbies and activities. It's amazing when you start looking at it that way, you're like, I really don't have that much time. Have you ever caught yourself saying, I just couldn't find the time to do it? Have you realized yet that time can never be found, only made? If you say, I'm going to find time to do it, you will never, ever, ever find it. You only can make time. We make time for things that matter. Finding time is very, very difficult. So you think about rest, you think about Sabbath, it really comes down to time, and we live in a culture that values busyness. Have you noticed that? How many people have an identity and how busy they are? And churches can be just a haven for those who crave busyness. It may not be what you're doing quality-wise, but it's what you're doing quantity-wise. I've been in areas where people will, as they introduce themselves to me, if I'm new to church, they're like, I'm involved in this, 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 this. I'm like, and I'm not impressed. I'm sad for them. Because that's too much. That's going to lead them to burnout. You know, quantity and quality are very tough to coexist together. The idea is to do less and do it better. So busyness in our culture, we value that so highly. The harder you work, the more things you have going on, the more impressive we think that we are. Time can never be found, only made. So you think about this. If you think about 168 hours. You think about the average day, if you get about 7 or 8 hours, you're awake for 16.5 to 17 hours a day, give or take. 16 to 16.5 hours. So I think it's interesting that even our waking hours on a Sabbath day equate to 10% of a week. That God still requires 10% of our time. 10% of, you know, isn't it? It's kind of a tithe of our time, the Sabbath. But if you look at time, I think the Greeks did a great job in explaining two different types of time. There was a type of time that was the Greek word chronos. Now, Chronos, if any of you know Greek mythology, Chronos was a god. He was actually, in Greek mythology, the father of Zeus. But he was completely self-absorbed. He was totally just freaked out that his kids would try to overthrow him because of how he came into power and how he got his title. And so he was a god who actually devoured his own children. This is the word for time that devours, that is soul-killing. They actually had to hide Zeus from him in Greek mythology so that he would not also be murdered by his own father. And chronos, chronology, chronicle, those words are based in that idea. Think about time that is soul killing. Time that is a job that you hate and you're staring at the clock and you're like, oh my goodness. You know, because it's amazing. We could say the phrase, you've got to be kidding. That was only 4 hours. We could say that two different ways. We could say it like you're sitting at a job and you feel like you've been there all day and you're like, oh my goodness, you gotta be kidding me, that's only 4 hours. Or like our small group this last week, it was 11 o'clock and someone went, you've gotta be kidding me, that was 4 hours? It went by like that. Some of you are like, I'm glad I'm not in that group. That's way late. There's chronos time, that time that devours, that time that leads to burnout. Then there's a different type of time, a Greek word kairos, K-A-I-R-O-S, kairos. This is time that refreshes. This is time that restores. This is time that renews. This is that 4 hours where you're like, I cannot believe 4 hours just went by. It went by like that, and it was so awesome. It's that vacation. It's that day that you're like, time is the enemy, but in the way that you don't want it to end. It's not the enemy in that you don't want it, like you want it to end. It's the enemy in that you're like, I wish this day would never, ever stop. We live in the reality of those two types of time, don't we? We all think of a time of a day that we're like, that was the greatest day of my entire life. Maybe for you, it was your wedding day. Or maybe for you, it was the last time you sat in a deer stand and had great success there. Or you went on a great sports trip or whatever it may be. Or the day that your child was born. I don't know if a woman would say that that was the greatest day. Probably the moment that they're holding the baby. But the stuff leading up to that probably wasn't something they'd want to duplicate all the time. It's time that refreshes, restores. It's Sabbath time. It's quality time. It's depth of time. It's time that heals. So we look at the Sabbath. We look at this day, this one day a week that God says, that day belongs to me. I don't want you to work. I want you to stop doing. Cease activity. Quit trying to achieve, quit trying to get more, quit trying to be more, and just rest. The Sabbath, if we set aside one day a week, it provides rhythm to our lives. Have you ever found yourself in a season where maybe you weren't taking any sort of time, and you get through, you're like, where in the world did the last year go? Maybe that hits you on New Year's Eve and they're like, hey, let's talk about our year. It's like, I can't believe it's over. I can't believe this happened. If we do not take time, how else do we reflect on what is happening in our lives? How else do we think deeply about the things that are happening? You think about Sabbath. And for some of you, you may run to what happened in many of the Jewish circles in Jesus' day, where it started to become a legalistic pursuit. Where, and I mentioned this before, but I think this is the most ridiculous example of what had happened. you know, the sages and the rabbis and the Pharisees were trying so hard to keep the people from violating the Sabbath, because there was this belief by the Pharisees that if the entire nation of Israel practiced the Sabbath, observed the Sabbath together on one day, that would usher in the Messiah. He would come. And so they believed that with all their hearts. So anyone they found breaking the Sabbath, they wanted to choke them, because they're like, because of you, the Romans are here. Because of you, we're continuing to be oppressed. Because of you, the kingdom is not coming. So you can understand why they were so upset at those they saw as Sabbath breakers, prostitutes, tax collectors, or this man named Jesus that healed a man on the Sabbath right in front of all of them. But they were so obsessed with protecting the Sabbath that they started to make rules about what to do and what not to do. So they got to the point, I think the height of lunacy with this was barring people from taking baths on the Sabbath, because taking a bath, you might spill water, and if you spilled water, you'd have to take a towel and you'd have to wipe that up, and that is now work. So therefore, do not bathe on the Sabbath, because you might spill and then have to work. I mean, talk about missing the point, right? But that was the culture that Jesus ministered in, was that sort of an interpretation. It's the Sabbath provides rhythm, it provides quality versus quantity. It's a day, it's a time to listen to God. Last week we talked about prayer and we talked about offering our requests to God, but there's another part of prayer, isn't there? The quieting of our hearts and listening to God. Prayer is not a telephone with the speaker cut off and just the receiver, where we drop our requests off at God's feet and don't listen. Prayer is a time to communicate with God, share with him what's on our hearts, but then also quiet our hearts and our minds and listen. And God may impress upon our heart through his word, or he may speak to us in some other way through someone that we respect, that God has shared something with them to share with you. Or maybe it's through prayer or through most clearly his word. But if we never listen, if we never slow our hearts down, we're going to miss what God may be wanting to communicate with us, because we don't ever turn off the noise. It's a time to reflect and to remember. If we don't do that from time to time, we miss things. Something I've never heard someone say: I wish I had worked longer hours and spent less time with my family, as they look back at their lives. I don't think anyone's ever said that. I wish I had spent less time having fun with my kids and more time at my office. Things you will never hear someone say as they look back on their life. How often do we hear the exact opposite? Why did I work so much? Why did I think it was so important to achieve, and miss so much in my family's lives, in my church? I wish I had served more. I wish I had spent more time with God and with people. Or someone saying, I spent way too much time with God and with my family and friends as they look back at their lives. I don't think there's any danger of someone saying that. It's quality versus quantity. We listen, we reflect, we remember, we play. Now, some of you maybe think about the Sabbath as a time to sit in a room and just sort of sit there in silence all day and do nothing. I mean, that's not really what God is talking about here. He's talking about a day to enjoy. A day to enjoy his presence. A day to enjoy friends and family. A day to feast with each other. A day to enjoy the life that he's given to us. And if we never stop and we're squeezing it in around everything else, we don't truly soak in all that God has for us. Our souls can become dry. A time to play, to feast, and to enjoy the life that he's given to us. I think that in order to rest, we rest in something. Sometimes we don't stop because we don't trust anyone else to do it. Have you ever found yourself in that place? I'll tell you, in ministry, that's a huge thing I've struggled with. I got it. No, let me do it. No, it's all right. I got it. I'll take care of it. Because I know I'll come through. But there's a part that's like, if you have that mindset in other areas of your life where you never stop, and it shows that you don't trust anyone else. And if we go further down that road, maybe what's underneath it all is that you don't really trust God, that he's in control. Therefore, there's a bit of an idolatry issue there, where you are in control and God is not. To rest and to stop is to say, God, you are in control. You are sovereign. And whatever else I need to get to can wait a day because you told me to stop. Therefore, you are going to help accomplish it and get it done. It can wait. I am not indispensable. Have you ever had to miss something that you, it was all like you were running the whole thing and at the last second you had to pull out and someone else stepped up and filled in and did a great job? And people are like, yeah, it went fine. And you're like, really? Well, it had to stink a little, right? Because I wasn't there. No, it was actually really awesome. It's actually better than anything you've ever done. No, they don't. Hopefully they don't say that. You know what I mean? Like, but there's that part of us. It's like, I'm the linchpin. If I'm not there, the whole thing's going to grind to a halt. And you get underneath that a few layers. The Sabbath is something that leads us on a pathway to humility and says, it's not all about me. It's not all about me. I can stop, I can rest, I can slow down. God will do it if it's going to be done. I think that as believers in Jesus Christ, we can rest in two things. The finished work of Jesus Christ upon the cross, we can rest in that. That's our identity. It's been done. We have been saved by grace through faith, and his work has been done so that we don't have to work for our salvation. You can rest in that. It says in the Bible, when he ascended on high, he then sat down at the right hand of God. It's a beautiful picture of resting in authority and position and accomplishment in where Jesus sits. He's sitting. Rest in our identity that the work has been done. It is finished. It is accomplished. The second thing we can rest in is that God is in control and we really aren't. And that's easy for me to say. It's much harder to live that, isn't it? But when we live that way, it leads us to truly cast all of our cares upon him because he cares for us. Because we're like, well, God, you're in control. There's nothing more I can do. Humanly speaking, all I can do, I've done. I'm going to lay the rest of it at God's feet and trust that he's in control. Now, that's not apathy. That's trusting God's sovereignty. Apathy is like, well, whatever. Whatever happens, happens. I don't really care. Trusting God's sovereignty and humility, saying, God, I cannot affect this. You can. Here it is. I'm not going to worry about it anymore. I'm getting anxious. I need to trust you with this. And I love that verse. It says, and then the peace of God fills your heart. There's peace in that moment. There's peace in the midst of chaos when you lay it at God's feet, when you rest in the fact that God is in control and I am not. So I think we rest in those two things, the finished work of Christ and that God is in control. And then we rest for a couple things. We rest for the feeding of our souls. The feeding of our souls. How else do we feed our souls? How else do our souls grow? How else are they encouraged? For many of you, you're sitting in here this morning, and this is a great time. This right now, what we're talking about, this is feeding your heart. It's feeding your soul. It's hearing from the Word of God. It's being challenged, encouraged, inspired, maybe convicted. But if we don't take time to feed our souls, the results can be devastating. Busyness, heart-killing. Sabbath. Heart restoring, heart healing, resting. Another reason we rest for the quality of our heart, the quality of our life. It's all about the quality of our lives, isn't it? And in Jesus, we are free. As Carolyn shared earlier, our hearts are alive and free now in Jesus Christ. We have been set free from all of the demands that were against us, all of the sin that hung over our heads, and now we can rest in that truth. It's our heart life. It's prioritizing that. And it also builds rest for the idea that it builds humility and it builds trust. And what did Jesus say about all this? You know, it's when the rabbis were teaching in that first century Jewish culture, to take upon their yoke, that meant their way of interpreting the law, the Old Testament scriptures, you know, that was meant, you know, you'd say, I'm following the yoke of Rabbi Gamaliel, or I'm following the yoke of Rabbi Hillel. That meant that you were following their interpretation of scriptures. That was one idea of the picture of the yoke. Also, the idea of oxen with the yoke and all that stuff. But specifically in the Jewish teaching world, it meant their interpretation of scriptures. And what did Jesus say to those about his yoke? How did he describe it? Matthew 11:28, come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light. So we follow Jesus. You know, you might say, well, later he says, in this world you will have trouble, to his disciples. What he's saying is that his presence, following him, it's that we get to have his presence in our lives. We get to follow him. And in the presence of Jesus, in his accomplishment, in what he's done for us, we find true rest for our souls. And what's amazing, if you keep reading Matthew 12 and following, you know what it comes right out of, or what it rolls right into, is the big controversy about him healing on the Sabbath and his disciples picking on the Sabbath and eating. And he finally says, I don't think you understand. Was man made for the Sabbath, or was Sabbath made for the man? He says, I'm the Lord of the Sabbath. Understand, it's meant to be something for us to practice the presence of God, something for us to get rest for our souls, for our hearts, and to make sure that we are not neglecting the spiritual part of who we are. You want to talk about something that's countercultural? Tell someone that you take one day a week to not do anything, just to spend a day with family and with God and praying and nurturing your soul, and watch their face. That is as countercultural as it gets right now. And that's the beauty of this, and yet we were made for this sort of rhythm. It gives us a restart to our week. It gives us the connection with God. It gives us the depth and the refreshment we desperately need to fill up that well of living water that we've been dispensing to others all week long. We're refreshed to hit another week. So we serve a God who says, stop what you're doing. The boss will never say that to you. But we serve a God who says, stop, one day a week, just rest. Now, what does that look like practically? This may not mean, if you have young children, you know, we can't look at Lily and Lund and be like, this is mommy and daddy's Sabbath, so that diaper is just going to have to stay. Obviously, there's ways to implement this, and there's ways to help each other accomplish this as a husband and a wife, or in your family setting. So it's finding time each week to set it aside to just rest your soul. And I'm telling you, if you don't do that, you reach that burnout stage fairly quickly if you are not tending to the needs of your soul. And we serve a God who says, do it. He says, do it. He says, follow me. I love that. I will give you rest. It's such a beautiful picture of what our life in Jesus can be. Have you met someone that just never seems hurried or harried? They just seem refreshed and relaxed, and they've got so much wisdom. You're like, what is your secret? They prioritize their heart. They prioritize their relationship with God. So I'm telling all of us, myself included, let's resolve to spend quality time with God and set aside time each week to rest. Mark Buchanan wrote an amazing book on the topic of rest and Sabbath, and it's called The Rest of God. And it's a double meaning in the title. In order to discover the rest of God, what remains that you don't know, you need to experience the rest of God, the Sabbath. And I think that's very true. And so I pray that as we leave today, we'd be challenged to do that. The band's going to come up and lead us in a song, It Is Well. It Is Well, no matter what's happened. What a great Sabbath song, isn't it? No matter what's raging around us in life, no matter what's happening, because of Jesus and what he's done for us, we can say it is well. It's going to be okay because God's in control. Will you pray with me? God, we love you so much. I thank you for this reminder even today. I pray that this week, each of us can make time for you, make time for our hearts, make time to rest, to cease from our busyness. I pray for those, God, who are teetering on that brink of burnout, I pray that you would help them to make this time, that they would be intentional in how they plan their weeks, that they would not be victims of their own schedules, but that we would take control of what we can control and lay everything else at your feet of the things we cannot control. I thank you, God, that you are a loving God who commands us to rest, who commands us to cease our work. It's a beautiful rhythm to live in, God. I pray that we can live this out for your honor and glory as radiant lovers of you. In Jesus' name, amen.